at Katra Podcast Conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for a very intense look at the fundamental fragility of our existence.
We really are.
We're doing a deep dive into the work of Bill McGuire, specifically his research into global catastrophic risks.
It's a sobering topic, but honestly, it's essential. We've synthesized a lot of his work on natural hazards, and he just meticulously charts out all these forces.
Geological, astronomical, systemic.
Yeah, all the things that are capable of ending, or at least profoundly resetting, human civilization.
So our mission today is to pull back the curtain on what he calls the illusion of escapable Earth.
Right.
We're trying to look past the sci-fi tropes and rationally assess these low-frequency, high-impact events. Supervolcanoes, megathrust earthquakes.
Things that he argues are geological inevitabilities. They're not just possibilities.
And this isn't just an intellectual exercise, right?
Not at all. The knowledge is critically urgent. McGuire really emphasizes that we are the first generation in all of human history to have both the scientific knowledge to see these threats.
And also the tech to maybe do something about them.
Exactly. To map them, monitor them, maybe even mitigate some of them.
And that intersection, that's what makes it so important. I mean, if we ignore this hard-won scientific foresight, we risk what he calls civilizational suicide.
You have to know the planet you live on. And that starts with understanding the guy who kind of compiled this terrifying report card for Earth.
So tell us about Bill McGuire. Who is he?
He's a hugely respected figure in this field. He's an emeritus professor of geophysical and climate hazards at University College London, UCL.
His background is in volcanology, I believe.
That's right, volcanology by training. But his expertise has really broadened to cover the whole spectrum. Volcanic hazards, earthquakes, tsunamis, climate instability.
And what I find so compelling is that he's not just stuck in an ivory tower.
No, not at all. He's actively advised the UK government. He was a member of their natural hazard working group.
Which means he's translating the raw science into, you know, actual policy advice.
And that's his distinctive perspective. He provides this this rare, sober, evidence-based realism. He avoids the extremes.
So he's not an alarmist, but he's also not in denial.
Exactly. He's equally dismissive of that casual denialism, the it won't happen here idea, and of just sensationalism designed to shock. He uses hard data to explain the physics of it all, not just what could happen, but how and why it will happen.
Okay, so that grounds the whole discussion. Let's jump into the core premise of his work then. What's the foundational idea?
It all comes down to a concept he calls the tranquility bias.
Tranquility bias.
Yeah. Basically, we are lulled into a false sense of security because our entire civilization has flourished during the last 10,000 years, a sliver of time called the Holocene.
And this period has been unusually stable, geologically and climatically.
Extraordinarily, but also temporarily stable.
So because Earth has been quiet for the last 10,000 years, we just assume that's the default state.
Precisely. But if you look at deep history, the rock, the ice cores, the planet is fundamentally way more volatile. It's prone to these massive shocks.
So his work is basically a guided tour of destruction.
That's a good way to put it. It moves logically from threats outside our planet to threats from within its core, and then finally to threats from the fragility of our own systems.
And the critical message is that our dense, hyper-optimized modern world is uniquely ill-equipped to handle these big, rare shocks.
That's the paradox. We've traded redundancy for maximum efficiency. But he's not advocating for, you know, paralysis or hopelessness.
No.
He frames the whole thing as a call for constructive pessimism.
Which means
a realistic assessment of the risks, coupled with determined, rational preparation and action.
Okay, let's start that tour then. Threats from beyond. Cosmic impacts. It's easy to dismiss this as, you know, something that happened to the dinosaurs. Ancient history.
But McGuire is insistent. He says Earth isn't a cosmic shooting gallery.
So it's not if, it's when.
Exactly. Over geological timescales, it's a certainty. And the Chicxulub impact 66 million years ago, that's our blueprint for utter devastation.
And we forget, the dinosaur extinction wasn't really caused by the initial blast itself, was it?
That's the key mechanism he points to. The blast and the tsunamis. Those were regional disasters. But the global catastrophe was the sheer volume of dust and sulfur aerosols thrown into the stratosphere.
Which blocked the sunlight.
For years, it caused a prolonged impact winter. Photosynthesis failed. The food chain completely collapsed. and the planet starved.
And you don't need a 10-kilometer asteroid to cause a civilization-level event. The modern wake-up call he points to is the Tunguska event, 1908.
Tunguska is just, it's so sobering. Because it was a relatively small object, maybe 60 to 100 meters across, and it didn't even hit the ground. It detonated in the air over Siberia.
And still flattened 2,000 square kilometers of forest.
Just think about that. That same energy release over, say, the center of Manhattan or London today.
The regional devastation would be absolute. Millions dead. The infrastructure of a global financial hub just gone.
And Tunguska-sized objects, they happen every century or so. Many are still untracked. It just shows that even smaller impacts carry massive shock potential now because of where we all live.
Okay, let's dive into the Earth's interior. Supervolcanoes. These feel like the ultimate geological wild card. So unpredictable.
They are maybe the most terrifying single event risk. McGuire defines a super eruption as a magnitude 8 or higher on the volcanic explosivity index.
And again, it's not the lava we should be worried about.
No, the lava is localized. It's the volcanic winter. Same mechanism as the asteroid impact, basically.
The example that really struck me was the Toba eruption in Sumatra, right? About 74,000 years ago.
The scale of Toba is just unimaginable. It released maybe 3,000 cubic kilometers of material. That colossal volume of aerosols just choked the atmosphere.
Dropping global temperatures for a decade, maybe.
Potentially. And the hypothesis is that this created a human genetic bottleneck. It might have reduced the entire global population to just a few thousand individuals.
So we're talking about an event that didn't just cause a crisis. It literally redefined the trajectory of our species.
Precisely. And speaking of interior threats, he also details megathrust earthquakes, M9.0 plus events.
These happen where tectonic plates are sliding under each other.
Or a subduction zone. And he focuses heavily on the Cascadia subduction zone.
Off the coast of the Pacific Northwest. Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, a very populated area.
And the geological evidence there is just undeniable. These M9 plus events, they happen roughly every 300 to 500 years.
And the last one was in 1700.
So the region is now statistically deep into the recurrence window for the next big one.
And the problem is that region, even though it's modern and advanced, is critically unprepared for the tsunami that would follow.
Absolutely. And then there's the black swan scenario he mentions. The mega tsunamis from volcanic island flank collapses.
The La Palma scenario in the Canary Islands.
Right. The idea that a massive chunk of the island could just slide into the Atlantic.
Generating a wave that could hit the east coast of the Americas thousands of kilometers away. It honestly sounds like a movie plot.
It does. And to be fair, there's some debate here among experts about the imminence of that or the absolute scale of the wave. Some argue the collapse would be slower, more gradual.
So not one giant wave.
Potentially. But McGuire's point is more structural. The mechanism is real. It has happened before. And if a rapid collapse did occur, the physics are clear.
The wave would be catastrophic.
So his concern is less about the exact timing and more that this potential threat has to be in our risk models. You can't just ignore it because it hasn't happened recently.
That makes sense. If the consequence is absolute, the probability doesn't need to be high. Okay, let's move to the last category, systemic threats, specifically abrupt climate change.
And his concern here isn't just the slow warming we talk about all the time. It's sudden, non-linear shifts, tipping points.
The historical example is the Younger Dryas event, about 12,900 years ago.
Yeah, the ice sheets were retreating, and then suddenly, bam,
great.
The Northern Hemisphere plunged right back into glacial conditions.
The speed is what's astonishing. Ice core data suggests this happened in maybe less than a decade. The whole climate system just flipped.
And the mechanism feared then, which is very relevant today, is the shutdown of the thermohaline circulation, the THC.
That's the big ocean conveyor belt, the Gulf Stream,
mm-hmm.
The North Atlantic's heat pump.
And the melting Greenland ice sheet is pouring fresh water into that region. That fresh water is less dense, and it disrupts the sinking mechanism that drives the whole thing.
Which could push the system toward a sudden collapse.
Exactly. And all these sudden shocks, cosmic, geological, climatic, that they all feed into this idea of cascading failures.
The interconnectedness paradox.
Yes. A regional event, like a quake off Japan, hits a global system that's been optimized for zero redundancy. Just-in-time supply chains, global finance.
So if one key hub goes down, the failure isn't contained. It ripples through everything.
We're highly efficient, but we're also deeply, deeply fragile.
Okay, let's shift to the key themes. Because McGuire doesn't just list threats, he gives us the tools to think about them. The first one is about risk.
The tyranny of low frequency risk. We have to understand that risk equals probability times consequence.
And our brains are just not good at this. We dismiss a 1 in 10,000 year event.
Right. But if the consequence is the absolute collapse of civilization, like with a super eruption, then the total risk is not negligible. It demands preparation.
And that leads right to the next point. Deep time versus human time.
Yeah. For us to survive long term, we have to adopt a geological timescale. Political cycles are what, 4 or 5 years?
Tectonic cycles are millennia.
And if we let short-term economic thinking dominate, we will inevitably fail to prepare for the events that actually define Earth's history.
And that ties into the resilience deficit.
Absolutely. Right. Modern society has prioritized efficiency over resilience. We've removed all the safety buffers to minimize cost.
So when a shock comes, our systems just can't absorb the blow.
Unlike older, less efficient, more localized systems that had that redundancy built in.
And yet, despite all this, the book is ultimately a powerful argument for science.
Science is our only defense. I mean, geological monitoring, astronomical surveys for NEOs, climate modeling, these are our insurance policies.
So ignoring the warnings from science is basically, as he said, civilizational suicide.
We have the data. The choice is ours.
Let's share a few memorable statements that really define his outlook. This first one captures our current situation perfectly. Our civilization exists because of a rare and temporary gift of geological and climatic tranquility. This stability is not the planet's default state, and it will not last forever.
That line just hits hard. It completely challenges our assumption that stability is normal. It forces you to see everything we've built as, well, as temporary, built during a lucky break.
Here's the second one. On preparation. The question is not whether catastrophic events will occur. Geological and astronomical evidence makes clear that they will. The question is whether human civilization will be prepared when they do.
That reframing is so crucial. It moves the conversation away from if and toward how. It's not about arguing possibilities, it's about debating strategy.
And finally, his antidote to despair, constructive pessimism. Constructive pessimism means accepting the reality of catastrophic risks while refusing to be paralyzed by them. It's the difference between informed concern and hopeless despair.
And that is the ultimate takeaway for you, listening. You don't live in constant dread, but you incorporate that informed awareness into your decisions. It's about realistic assessment paired with determined action.
So let's translate that. What are the real-life applications? What should change?
Well, personally, it's about moving from vague panic to informed preparedness. If you live in a place like Cascadia, your emergency plan needs to account for months of disruption, not 72 hours.
Because you know the roads will be gone and help isn't coming quickly.
Exactly. At the policy level, his work is a direct argument for more public funding for scientific monitoring, better seismic networks, fully funded planetary defense programs for tracking NEOs.
These are nonpartisan insurance policies for everyone.
They should be. And we have to stop using short-term economics as the main driver for things like building codes. We have to choose resilience over short-term savings.
Especially for critical infrastructure, like hospitals and power grids.
For sure. And his final point is that catastrophes don't respect borders. So this is maybe the strongest rationale there is for international scientific collaboration over petty national rivalries.
For me, the lasting insight was really the importance of that geological timescale. We're so focused on the next quarter, the next election. We completely miss these vast cycles that genuinely dictate our survival. That humility is, it's crucial.
And what stood out for me was the speed of the younger Dryas climate shift. The idea that the whole system could just flip in under a decade. That nonlinear risk, that tipping point. That's the terrifying unknown we face today. And our responsibility, armed with this foresight, is to translate that knowledge into action before, you know, the window closes.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.